Ladies and gentlemen, referee John McCarthy's called a stop to this contest at 3 minutes, 36 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by knockout and new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
I'm thrilled to bring in our next guest here on the show. He's definitely made his mark on the sport of MMA. He's the former UFC middleweight champion, and he became a UFC Hall of Famer in 2019. He also recently has released a book called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. He is Michael Bisping, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Michael, truly a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. It's not every day we get a UFC Hall of Famer on the show. And with that being said, we'll dive into it and talk about your book that was released just a few months back. It's called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. And so, Michael, right out of the gate, my first question, why the book? What put you down that route is to say, okay, I'm going to put my life in the cage in a book?
Yeah, well, to be honest, as I was fighting during my fight career, a few people came to me with a book deal, but the time wasn't right. I was still fighting. The story wasn't finished. And then obviously, I retired. The story was finished. It was complete. And, a lot of people were telling me, Mike, you should write a book. You've got quite an inspirational story. Obviously, I fought through a lot of injuries and I, without getting too preachy, I overcame quite a lot of adversity in my life. So I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And fortunately, it's been very well received. It was a Sunday Times bestseller in the UK, and so far, very well received out here in America. So I'm very grateful.
You mentioned that your story wasn't finished until you decided to hang it up. My thought from a professional athlete standpoint has always been, legacy talk drives me crazy if we have it here on the show, because the story is rarely written. So when you go back and you look at your career, is there a specific time frame, not necessarily a moment, but a time frame that is most special to you that helped that story all come together?
One of the big problems was I got a detached retina in 2013, and I actually ended up losing the vision in my right eye. So I fought through a lot of adversity, a lot of injuries, many operations on my eye, being told I'd never fight again and things like that. And, of course, I did fight again, and I actually became champion of the world with limited vision. So, that's what a lot of people draw an inspiration from. The fact that I refused to give up and I kept competing under those handicapped circumstances, shall we say.
Yeah, no question. And that's extremely fascinating in the book. I know it is well detailed, some of the injuries that you had to fight through. When a doctor tells you that you should probably think about hanging it up, and you're a fighter and you feel like you're in your prime and you haven't accomplished exactly what you wanted to accomplish yet. In the book, you had mentioned at one particular time you hadn't received a title fight yet and you're dealing with these injuries. Does that thought of hanging it up prematurely ever even cross your mind? Do you even consider it?
No, it's bizarre, because right now, I'd never consider fighting now. It's weird, because that person that was alive then is kind of dead now, if you know what I mean. Because right now, I look back, I think, wow, that person must have been crazy, because quitting, it never crossed my mind once, and it wasn't so much being champion of the world for ego reasons. It was because I was trying to set my family up financially, trying to give them the life that I never had, and the only way I could do that at that time was through fighting. Fortunately now, fighting's, it's opened some doors for me, so I've got other opportunities. But back then, that was all I had. And if that was taken away from me prematurely, then, it wouldn't have been good for our family. That was essentially how I was keeping a roof over our heads.
The book starts and the way it ends, it's the total culmination of everything. Everything that I've read so far in this book, I absolutely love. And so I definitely recommend to the listeners that they pick this up. But Michael, if we go back to the beginning of time, the beginning of your time, when you first started fighting, did you ever envision that at one point you would be a Hall of Famer within your sport? Was that the initial goal, or immediately was it, let's try to make a living because I'm good at fighting?
Yeah. No. First of all, thanks for your kind words. Really appreciate that. And secondly, no. That wasn't... as I say, I didn't get into fighting because I was searching fame and fortune or anything like that. When I was a kid, I left school at 16 years old. you know, and you come to find out there's not too much opportunities for untrained 16-year-olds. And, you know, I met my beautiful wife and we had children and, you know, money was very, very tight. You know, we grew up in a poor part of England and, you know, I was struggling to make ends meet, working dead-end jobs, you know, 60, 70 hours a week and still absolutely broke. And I just had enough of it, you know, and I thought, well, you know, I did some soul-searching. What can I do with my life? And I kept coming back to fighting. I had a martial arts background. I was talented at martial arts. Unfortunately, I was that type of kid that was always, you know, kind of getting in scraps when I was younger. So I knew I could fight as well. But my initial goal, was to earn enough money from fighting so I could quit work, go to college, and get some training to get a real job. Now, of course, everything far excelled that. You know, I exceeded that part of me. You know, I became champion of the world, as you nicely said. You know, I ended up in the UFC Hall of Fame and was able to set myself up. So that was the initial goal. But as I say, you know, things worked out.
Again, our guest right now, former UFC middleweight champion Michael Bisping. We're talking about his career and his book, Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. Michael, let's jump ahead. If we go to chapter 12, and I found this chapter extremely interesting in the book because it does document your loss to Dan Henderson at UFC 100 by knockout. It was the first time, correct, that you had ever been knocked out in the cage.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't just a knockout. For those people that don't know, I mean, it's one of the most infamous knockouts in UFC history. It was the mother of all knockouts. I mean, he knocked me out unconscious, and then whilst I was still unconscious, he dived through the air and then landed a big elbow smash to my face as well. So I was unconscious for a while, and then, you know, it took me a while for my brain to essentially work again.
There's documentation that you didn't remember even stepping into the cage that night. Is that true?
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't understand what was going on. And then my manager was like, we've got to get you to the hospital. And then I'm like, why? What's going on? He's like, Michael, you've just been knocked out. And I'm like, oh, yeah. No, I'm fine. I'm just going to get in the shower. I get in the shower and then I poke my head out of the shower around the corner. I'd be like, hey, come here. He'd say, what? I'd say, what's going on? He'd be like, Michael, you've been knocked out. We need to take you to the hospital. I'm like, oh, no. I'm fine. And then, of course, a minute later, I'd poke my head out of the shower and say, hey, what's going on? And he's like, wow, we got to get you to the hospital. And then I was in the back of the hospital. I was with Frank Mir. He'd just been beaten up by Brock Lesnar. And I'm in the back of an ambulance going to the hospital. And I was like, ah. And my buddy says, what? What's wrong? I said, yeah, you know, before when I was saying what happened, I said, it's all coming back to me. I remember. But it took me a while yet to remember all that. So, you know what I mean? Getting knocked out like that, you know, it has its consequences.
Well, no question. And following that loss, you then go on, I believe it was you won 5 out of your next 6 fights, and that set up the showdown with Chael Sonnen. So how did that loss to Dan Henderson kind of mold your career? And I guess maybe even fall in line with the story, quitters never win.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, listen, you know, it's like they always say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And, you know, as I said before, I had some goals, some things I wanted to achieve for my family. And that was, you know, it's all I knew at this point. I'd put so much time and effort into being a professional fighter. I had to make it work. And to be honest, I still felt like I was good enough to be the champion. I had some losses, some key losses. But I you know, I was always close. I was always in those fights. I was always competitive. I knew that if I just kind of got my mind right, then I could be more successful. Because, believe it or not, even though fighting is such a physical sport, the mind controls everything. And the mental side of things, for me, wasn't correct. I always thought that if I went into a fight angry and wound up and emotional, and angry is the best word, that I would win the fight. Now, you may beat, you know, 95% of the people like that, but the true elite, the best in the world, that's not going to work. I mean, if you're in a frantic frame of mind, you know, you're never the best version of yourself, regardless of what you're doing. If you're angry, if you're a radio host, if you're whatever it is you're doing, if you're angry and pissed off, you're not the best version of yourself. And certainly in a high-level fight with world-class fighters, that's not the way to be. You need to be calm, cool, collected. You need to be in the moment, you know. So I knew if I got that side of things right, then, you know, I could compete. And fortunately, I got with a great coach called Jason Perillo, and he worked hard on the mental aspect of things. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
Well, let's fast forward. Let's go to February of 2016, London, England. It's you going toe-to-toe with Anderson Silva. His name is obviously synonymous with mixed martial arts, and you come out on top. Talk to me about the importance of not only winning that fight, but the build-up and everything that kind of built as you picked up that victory.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. So Anderson Silva, obviously, he's you know, one of the greatest of all time to ever do it, one of the best martial artists that ever lived. And when he was a long-time champion, I always wanted to fight him. And, you know, I got into number one contender matchups, and then I'd lose it. Then I'd build myself up again, I'd get a number one contender matchup, and then I'd lose it, you know. But I always felt that I could beat Anderson Silva, and a lot of people thought I was crazy. Anyway, as it happens, he lost the belt, and he actually failed the steroid test, and we ended up fighting. And, you know, the fight was a war, it was a back-and-forth battle. You know, I took a nasty knee in the third round, people thought I was unconscious and things like that. I'd fight through a lot of adversity. You know, the last few rounds of the fight, I was just covered in blood, with blood pouring out of my face in every orifice. But it was a good back-and-forth battle. And, I was at that moment in time, that was the proudest moment of my career. A win over Anderson Silva was like a big deal to me. It was in London, packed-out arena. So, yeah, that was definitely, a great memory for me.
That obviously sets the stage for what many at the time would have considered one of the biggest title upsets in UFC history, as you defeat Luke Rockhold. And the story behind this is phenomenal for those who don't know. I mean, you took this fight on such short notice, and you're going up against Luke Rockhold, a guy that had already submitted you once before, and you step in and you take care of business in the opening round to become middleweight champ.
Yeah. So I was actually up in Toronto. I was filming a movie with Vin Diesel. A little name drop for you there. But so I was filming. I hadn't been near a gym in 3 months, but I'd always wanted a title shot. I'd just beaten Anderson Silva, and as I say, I was in Toronto. And then I get a text message from a journalist saying, listen, the title fight with Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman is off because Chris Weidman is injured. So I text the UFC. I say, hey, listen, you know, if either of those can't fight, you know where I am. And I didn't think I'd get the fight, but I just thought maybe it'll line me up for the next shot or something like that. Hold on one second. Luke, just be quiet, buddy. I'm doing an interview on the phone. Sorry, my son's making a lot of noise.
You're good.
So I texted the UFC, and then they called me back, and they gave me the fight. It was like 10 days' notice against the guy that had already beaten me. So I went in there. I was a 10-1 underdog. But I went in there very confident, you know, and fortunately, as you said, I got a beautiful knockout in the first round and became champion of the world. And the fact that I took it on 10 days' notice, I was filming a movie, I hadn't been in a gym, I mean, that just makes the story so much better. So, it all worked out.
Yeah, and that is in the book, Quitters Never Win. You can read that story, how Michael Bisping took that fight, stepped in the cage, and got the win over Luke Rockhold. So I have to ask you, Michael, is it more gratifying to top a legend like Anderson Silva, or is it more gratifying to silence kind of a smug jerk like Luke Rockhold?
Well, believe it or not, they're both very satisfying. Anderson Silva, at that moment in time, that was the biggest win of my career. Then I followed that up and I beat Luke Rockhold and became the champion. So I guess that trumps it, you know, becoming the world champion after so long. But still, they're both big moments. And then my fight after that, I defended the belt in Manchester. So that was great to bring the belt home back to the UK and defend the belt successfully on home soil. You know, 2016 was a great year.
Yeah, and when you defend the belt in Manchester, you top Dan Henderson, which makes it even sweeter, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Obviously, he had that vicious knockout win over me a few years ago. But the night that I won the belt, Dan Henderson himself had a huge knockout victory himself. So the stars just kind of aligned and that fight came together. Obviously, as I said, it was in Manchester, and that's in England. So there's an 8-hour time difference. So the actual fight itself in Manchester was at 6 a.m. in the morning for the U.S. audience. And I didn't think anybody was going to buy tickets. Fortunately, the arena sold out in 6 minutes. And he almost repeated what he did in the first fight, because in rounds one and two, he landed two massive shots that, you know, again, almost knocked me out and opened up all kinds of cuts and bruises on my face. But fortunately, you know, I got back up and got the job done.
Again, Michael Bisping, our guest right now, UFC Hall of Famer. Michael, one of my favorite things about this book, Quitters Never Win, is it does give you a little bit of insight to not only the business, but the behind the scenes of the UFC. And there was one particular sentence in this book that I have to ask you about. You said, after winning a fight, and I'm paraphrasing here, after winning a fight, that is an extremely important time for you in the cage because it gives you an opportunity to build your own narrative for what's next. I'm really curious about that aspect of the business itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's your platform. That's your moment there. Fortunately, if you're fortunate enough to win a fight and you've got the microphone, I mean, that's your chance. You know, a lot of people, they waste that opportunity. They don't really say anything, but that's your time. That's your moment. If there's a fight that you want, if there's a title fight that you want, if there's a message that you're trying to get out there, you know, to the people, that is your time, you know. So you're gonna make the most of it. As I say, I see so many people, they squander that moment. They don't make the most of it. They just say, I'm just here. I'm just happy, you know. UFC, just give me whoever you want next. It's like, come on, people don't want to hear that. Say something. Anything's better than nothing. Be controversial, be funny, be nice, be heartwarming, call somebody out, talk some trash, whatever, say something. Don't waste that moment. So you know, unfortunately, I always did it. Wasn't always the right thing what I said, but certainly gave them something to listen to.
Now Michael, we can end with this. I believe your story, it's a great underdog story. I mean, it's true. To me, it's a real-life Rocky, right? And if we go back to the movie Rocky Balboa, at the end of his last fight, he says, hey, the beast is gone. That's what he tells his brother-in-law, Paulie. The beast is gone. He can retire. Is that true? Is that really what it feels like when you leave the cage for the final time? You know, hey, that beast is gone and my career is over?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it's funny you say that about Rocky, because that is like the comparison that a lot of people make, which I take as a compliment, so thank you very much. And yeah, you know, I mean, it is weird. A lot of people always ask me, you know, because I am retired now, say, come on, Mike, are you going to come out of retirement? Are we going to get one more fight? And the answer is a flat no. Number one, I've got too many injuries. I couldn't do that. And secondly, you know, the beast is gone. That period of my life is over. It was a great time of my life. I'm very thankful. I've got a lot of great memories. He was very kind to my family. But, you know, I'm not that person anymore. The beast is gone. And now I'm commentating for the UFC, so that scratches that itch. Fortunately, I'm still a part of the sport. I'm still octagon side. I'm able to commentate the fight. So, as I say, I'm still involved. If I had nothing to do with the UFC, then, of course, I'd probably miss it more. But more importantly, as you said, to use that phrase, the beast is gone. I'm a very different person these days.
Michael Bisping, our guest right now. Again, the book is called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. I highly recommend you pick it up. Michael, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find you social media-wise and also follow your work now that you are no longer in the cage.
Yeah, well, one of the main things I do that fills with time, I actually have a podcast called Believe You Me. See that on YouTube or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from, you can find that. So that's called Believe You Me. Check it out. Me and my buddy, he's a comedian from New York. We talk about fights. We talk about current events. We often get a little too controversial. We're funny. We're silly, you know, but a lot of people love it. It's actually very successful. Sorry, very popular, pardon me. So, yes, so check that out, Believe You Me. And, I'll probably see you on a UFC event sometime soon when we can all get together in big crowds. In the meantime, I hope everyone is staying safe throughout this crazy time, staying away, social isolation, social distancing, all that good stuff. But my best wishes are with everybody.
Michael, I truly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for the time. You and your family stay safe.
All the best, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We're going to break one last time. When we return, we'll put the final touches on this week of Drive Time Sports. More coming up when we return live from the Auto Forum Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.